Chapter 5 Luna, Somnus Citadel. The Thunderhawk Ferozian dropped down towards the bleak, grey dust deserts of Luna. Flying over mountains and the towers of installations, the scorch-plated gunship roared across void-black skies. Luna had a history stretching back almost as far as Terra, and the grand Gothic architecture of its sun-baked facilities and installations seemed in a constant state of renewal and improvement. Derelict fortresses and the ruins of palaces dating back to the Heresy provided the foundations for newer Baroque structures that had sprung from the decimation to reach for the stars. Everything was covered in a harsh dust, the colour and consistency of gunpowder, while the searing orb of Sol reflected off the moonrock architecture. The Ferozian banked down between towers and palace spires, then streaked across a desert sea towards the Somnus Citadel, the Inquisition's base of operations. Leaving behind a disturbed trail of dust, the Thunderhawk sizzled through the Citadel's atmosphere shielding before weaving between its towers and fortifications. Great defense lasers tracked the Ferozian's progress, while inquisitorial gunships were scrambled to escort the Thunderhawk around restricted facilities. Accelerating across the sprawling expanse of the Citadel installation, the Space Marine craft left the gunships in the wake of its afterburners. Beyond the towering indomitability of the inquisitorial Citadel, the Thunderhawk dropped towards a much older structure. Shimmering in solar radiation, the Gothic ruins of a minor palace rose up to meet the Ferozian. A circuit around the structure revealed that it was not merely another derelict and long-abandoned facility. Light shone from within the crumbling structure of its austere halls and the glassaic of its window ports. Shuttles sat in its domed crater silos. Now that the Silent Sisterhood had returned to Luna, these ruins were serving them as a basic facility. Dropping down through the atmosphere shielding of the pressurized dome, the Thunderhawk came into land. Like the sealed-off sections of the derelict palace, the silo crater benefited from an atmosphere and artificial gravity. As the Thunderhawk touched down, it created a small storm of grit and dust about it. Its nose ramp began to open, revealing Chapter Master Maximus Thane. Like the Thunderhawk and the two Space Marines escorting him, the Chapter Master wore the colours of the Fist's Exemplar. As the gunship touched down, Thane stepped off the ramp and crossed the silo landing plaza. Crunching through the dust, he strode with power and purpose. It was not just that time was of the essence. Thane now knew what he was going to do with the time he had left. The days, weeks, or months before the Beast made his monstrous push for Terra. With a green tide rising up through Segmentum Solar, flooding core systems with apocalyptic alien ferocity, the arrival of further attack moons, or the convergence of Orc armadas into some kind of super fleet, seemed inevitable. As he marched across the plaza, Thane could see the towers of the palace framed in the light of Holy Terra. The glorious besmirched jewel at the heart of the Imperium, Terra hung defiantly in Luna's austere skies. Its smog-streaked cloud cover was pierced by capital hives and smothered by orbital plates, geosynchronous stations, and star forts. The blizzard of monstrous vessels about the planet gave the impression that it was being viewed upon a static-laced screen. Even so, the sight stirred his heart. Everything Thane had done, and more importantly was going to do, was in service of the throne world and the God Emperor, who ruled an empire from its modest magnificence. As Thane passed another Thunderhawk, this one clad in ivory, battle-scarred plate, he was joined by Sergeant Dathan Tykor. Like the Chapter Master, the Excoriator had recovered from his wounds. While his battered armor was the same, his bionic arm, repaired and reattached, gleamed in the lunar sunlight.
"As you requested, Master Thane," Tykor said, "the High Lords await your pleasure in the Palace Reception Hall."
"I'm indebted to you, brother," Thane said. "You may return to the Phalanx. There is still much to be done. Captain Oberon will have need of you."
"Thank you, Chapter Master," Tykor said.
As two Excoriator's gunships lifted off from the plaza, turning the silo into a swirling haze of dust, Thane walked between a pair of palatial barges. system craft, usually reserved for high lords and visiting dignitaries. It had been these craft that Tycor's gunships had escorted to Luna. Baroque wonders of beauty and excess, the barges came with their own security details. While the first were surrounded by ceremonial cybernetic soldiers garbed in glorious gold warplate and crimson cloaks, the second was all but unattended. A single muscular figure waited on the colossal ramp, dressed in black body glove and hooded cloak. He sheltered from the lung-shredding dust just within the palatial compartment quarters. At the silo barbican, Thane and his fist's exemplar passed a pair of sentries. Sisters of Silence in half-helms, bronzed plate and furs nodded their acknowledgement to the chapter master. Within, Thane saw two High Lords of Terror standing with Lady Cavallinera Brassanus, commander of the Silent Sisterhood. Cavallinera, standing in her plate of ancient crimson, signed a greeting. Since retaking their vows, the sisters communicated only through their own language of subtle signs and hand signals. Not unlike the battle sign used by the Adeptus Astartes, it hadn't taken Thane and his officers long to master the basics. As he got closer to Brassanus, Thane felt a part of himself wither inside. A shiver ran through him, an unusual sensation for a space marine, let alone a chapter master. As a member of the Silent Sisterhood, Brassanus was a blank, what psychers called an untouchable. While they were highly trained warriors in their own right, the mere presence of a Sister of Silence was an anathema to all witch breeds and demons whose powers flowed from the warp. Brassanus's own ability to nullify psychic energy was considerable. Thane wasn't even a psyker, and still proximity to the Sister Commander made him feel strange, uncomfortable even. He personally liked Cavallinera Brassanus, but being around her filled him with a bottomless sensation of spiritual revulsion. As he arrived, the Sister Commander nodded a silent acknowledgement. The first High Lord was Kubik, the Fabricator General of Mars, an ornate fusion of man and machine whose augmentations were lost in his rust-coloured robes and the darkness of his hood. The Fabricator General sensed Thane's approach and turned, his revolving optics changing colour and orientation. Drakan Vangarich, meanwhile, was dressed in the sombre finery of a High Lord, the Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum, favouring blacks, greys, and robes with room to conceal the tools of his trade. Gone was the quirk of the Grand Master's lip, or the knowing glint of his eye, features that had been in evidence the last time Thane had seen him. Something had changed in Vangarich. He looked every bit as serious as a man should be, having attained his station. "My lords," Thane greeted them, as his fist's exemplar peeled off to stand to one side. "Lady Brassanus, thank you for meeting me here. Mars, or the Phalanx, would have been inappropriate, given what has happened previously and what I intend us to discuss. The Imperial Palace even more so." Brassanus signed an acknowledgement. With his haptic translators, Kubik had no problem understanding the sister. Similarly, Vangarich, with his trained talents, had wasted little time in familiarizing himself with the sister's sign language. Thane looked to the Fabricator General, but Kubik seemed as cold and consistent as the machine he mostly was. Given the recent conflict between the Adeptus Astartes and the Priesthood of Mars, Thane had expected some haughty indignation at a summons, perhaps even outrage, at very least a rehearsed objection.
"Proceed, Chapter Master Thane," Kubik said simply, the metallic echo of his voice accompanied by the brief flicker of revolving optics.
As Thane looked to Vangarich, the Grand Master extended his arm as an invitation to speak.
"Would you walk with me?" Thane asked. "I have something to show you."
Lady Brassanus led the way through the palace installation. Within an elevator of mirrored metal that dropped down below Luna's surface, Thane turned to the others.
"You have heard, of course," he said, "of the death of Chapter Master Courland."
"With the loss of the Primarch and our failure to destroy the alien beast, a triptych of woes," Vangarich said.
"Tragedy upon tragedy," Lady Brassanus signed.
"Despite their best efforts, the Imperial Fists failed the Imperium and themselves," Kubik said.
The words were difficult for Thane to hear, but hear them he knew he must if he were to bring the High Lords together.
"As I believe the Imperium failed them," Thane said.
Our efforts against the beast have been the thrust of a spear, with the imperial fists as the tip of that spear. Except everyone else behind that thrust, let go, believing some other group or institution would be there to follow the strike through. This is why the beast lives on, our killing thrust wasted. It is why the spear tip shattered and the imperial fists were lost.
The Adeptus Astartes, Kubik said, have a history of rash action and reaction, as had the Primarchs that gene-sired them. The priests of Mars are slow to act, but effective in their execution.
We have much to learn from each other, Lady Brisana signed, if we are to defeat this threat.
For me,
Drakon Vangrich said, his lips unsmiling and face unusually taut,
direct action is the remedy for the myriad afflictions ailing the Imperium. For a long time I waited for such action. I do not blame Chapter Master Kurland or Primarch Vulcan for their failures. At least they tried. I, like billions of other Terrans and countless Imperial citizens, wait again. We wait for a man who will act, who will step forth and do what needs to be done. History records many such men, the bold and the resolute, who push to the fore just as the Imperium needs them. Are you such a man, Chapter Master Thane?
I am, Thane told Vangrich with steel in his eyes. Lady Brisanas is, of course, right. If history can teach the Sons of Dawn anything, it is humility. We cannot act alone. The Adeptus Astartes are one piece in the great puzzle that is the Imperium. Without others at our side, we are nothing, as the Imperial fists are now. Every brother of the Last Wall aches to avenge his brothers, but I take the Fabricator General's view. It is better to take a little time, gather our strength, and act as one.
But we have no time, the Grand Master of Assassins told him. Another attack moon could appear over Terra at any moment. The beast's fleets invade the core systems. The orcs will swamp us.
But we have a little time, Thane pressed, as the elevator rumbled along the deep shaft, and I intend to use it wisely.
How? Vangrich asked, his words like a presented blade. For if the Adeptus Astartes will not act decisively, then other steps will need to be taken to ensure all institutions play their part in the dark times to come.
And they will, Grandmaster, Thane told him. For I go to the High Lords not to appeal for their assistance, for the full weight of their power, influence, and forces they command. I go to demand it.
Kurland and Vulcan could not achieve that, the Fabricator General said. What makes you think you can? Now, with the first founding chapter lost, and the faith of the people broken?
Firstly, Thane said, I do not intend to make the loss of the Imperial fists public. As you observe, the morale of the people and their leaders is fragile. We don't want panic.
There would be no panic on Mars, Kubik assured him. Or in the temples of the Officio,
Vangrich added. Or here, Thane said, bowing his head to Lady Brisanas. But secondly, we are not Kurland and Vulcan. They observed the sanctity of the Council. They played the political games of the palace and lost. I do not intend to do that.
The Adeptus Astartes have not imposed their will in such a way since the days of the Heresy, the Sister Commander signed. To compel the High Lords to action? I fear history will not remember you kindly for this strategy.
If to act is damnation, and inaction equally so, Thane told her, what will it matter? If we fail, Vangrich added, there will be no one to remember. You take responsibility, Kubik clarified.
For my actions, Thane said, and those of my chapter. Thane looked at the Sister Commander and the two High Lords. As Chapter Master of the Imperial Fists, Thane would already have the nominal support of the Council to coordinate the defense of Terra and destroy the beast. Kubik, Vangrich, and Brisanas would, of course, work out what he intended to do. Thane had honored his promise to his brothers in not informing them in so many words, but at the same time, he knew he could rely upon their discretion. Kubik sat on bigger secrets than the resurrection of a Space Marine chapter in his Martian vaults, while anyone, told by the Grand Master of Assassins, would almost certainly end up dead. As for the Sister Commander, Thane was sure that Lady Brisanas would keep her silence.
How is this to be done?
Kubik asked, his voice the metallic hush of a conspiratorial utterance. The head must be cut off from the serpent, Vangarich said.
Or rather, heads from the Hydra, Thane said, since it was discovered that there is more than one beast. They all must die.
The logic holds, Kubik agreed. Now, as it did then, these Veridi, while monstrous in size and territorial appetite, are still creatures of simple hierarchy. While warlords of sufficient ferocity and psychic presence endure, the invaders will retain their cohesion and technological supremacy.
Divide and conquer, Thane said. We can prevail against fragmented fleets and orcs intent on fighting themselves as much as the Imperium. We cannot prevail while the beasts of Ulanor endure. That is why we have to return to Ulanor.
The elevator eventually reached its destination, far below the surface of Luna. Lady Brassanus led the way into the rocky chamber beyond. Immediately outside the elevator, Brassanus met with another senior sister in distinctive silver armor. The pair exchanged a brief conversation through deft signs made with their gauntlets. The sister looked to Thane and the High Lords, her steely gaze lingering suspiciously on the chapter master. Thane bowed his head briefly in acknowledgement. Exchanging nods with Brassanus, the silver-clad sister left her commander and took her place in the elevator, bound for the lunar surface. The chamber was dark, and Thane's armoured footfalls clanged on the metal walkway leading from the elevator. The bronze mesh and rail of the companionway appeared to be made of a copper-threaded alloy. As they walked after Brassanus, they came upon more Sisters of Silence. These warriors were clad in similarly bronzed plate, furs and cloaks, with blades at their sides and bolt guns in their gauntlets. They were stationed along the walkway like sentinels, standing in silence and darkness. After exchanging a brief interplay of signs with one of the sisters, Brassanus took lantern-like lamps from a rack and handed them to Thane, Vangarich, and the Fabricator General. Switching them on, the party bathed the walkway in a red light. They could see that the route extended through the open space of the chamber high above the cavern floor. Ahead, the mesh walkway divided into junctions and crossways, as well as flights of steps leading to upper and lower levels. Sisters of Silence stood straight and with their eyes closed in the darkness, not flinching at the red light of the lamps or acknowledging the passing of their sister commander. Their concentration remained unbroken. At the centre of the structure of walkways was a small cluster of cages, all different shapes and sizes, all made of the same bronzed metal. As the red light of the lamps ghosted through the bars of the cages, hulking creatures were revealed within, green-skinned monstrosities that dwarfed the sisters guarding them. Three of them. Stripped of armour and decoration, the orcs were draped in thick chains. Though starved and restrained, they were still anything but docile. All claws, muscle, and trap-jawed teeth. The brawn of their chests rose and fell as they clutched the bars of their cages. As the red light felt its way through their gargoyle-esque forms, the creatures became increasingly aware of the new arrivals. Nostrils twitched, beady eyes flickered, and saliva dripped from tusk-crowded mouths, and the orcs roared their hostility. In amongst the snapping and the savage ferocity of the creatures, Thane thought he heard something else. A monstrous force of alien obscenity and fury, the sound of distant destruction pulling him in like a black hole. It was the beast, reaching out, as it had done before, across the galaxy. It filled Thane's mind with momentary madness and a dread feeling of the horrors to come. Then it was gone. Vangarich leant in with his lamp. Suddenly, one of the orcs launched itself at the cage wall, dragging its chains along with it. It heaved back and forth on the bars with its jagged claws, making the metal bars groan in protest. The rabid thing's eyes lit up with a blazing green light. Sparks of ethereal energy showered from its dagger-filled maw, and arcs of strange power coursed across its flesh and sinews. Expecting such a reaction, Lady Brassanus and the Chapter Master stood their ground. Kubik's optics whirred around with surprise, changing colour and intensity, while the Grand Master of Assassins stepped back, his hands within his robes, on what Thane imagined to be concealed blades and pistols. The actions of the first orc prompted the other two into a similar frenzy of rage, and they threw themselves savagely at the cage walls and floors. Ethereal energies dribbled from the orcs' noses and ears, and green lightning arced between their bodies. Their roars rustled the robes of the High Lords, while the hulking monster's efforts to get to Thane, Vangarich, and the Fabricator General shook the walkway structure.
"These are the psychic specimens," Vangarich said. "The creatures whose abilities you used against the orcs in the last attack on Ulanor?"
"Yes," the Sister Commander signed. "Like psychic mutants amongst humanity, they are outcasts, unpredictable, difficult to control."
"So much so," Kubik added, "that the psychic energy they harness from gatherings of their kind can overload the conduit creature. This results in an explosion of stored energy and the death of the specimen."
"Following the last attack on Ulanor," Lady Brisanas explained, "we had one left, which the Soul Drinkers handed over into our custody. Since then, two more have been secured by the Death Watch."
"There are three creatures in total, then," Vangarich said.
"And only three," Thane said, "so we shall have to make them count."
As they spoke, the orcs raged beside them, crackling with otherworldly energies.
"The cages are shielded with holy wards," Brisanas reassured Kubik and the Grand Master, "and my sister's presence keeps the creature's psychic powers in check. You are safe here."
"On Ulanor it'll be a different matter," Thane told the two High Lords. "I know that you have seen specimens dissected, but we wanted you to see this for yourself, so that you can see what the Sons of Dawn will be up against on that distant planet. The size and ferocity of these Xenos, and their relentless instinct to butcher and kill."
"These specimens have been stripped of their strength and their weaponry,"
the Sister Commander signed,
"but they're still dangerous."
"These now are but feral creatures," Thane said. "The ones we will face on Ulanor have blades and blasters, armadas of attack ships, and gravitic technologies of mass destruction. They will have armored moons at their disposal and hordes without number at their command."
A howl of metal made Kubik turn suddenly. In its fury, one of the orcs had managed to bend one of the bars of its cage just enough to squeeze its hand through, and was grasping with a malformed claw at the Fabricator General's robes. Lady Brisanas snatched her silver-bladed sword from her belt and lopped the broken claw off at the wrist, prompting the orc to retract the gushing stump of the limb.
"Well, I'm convinced, Chapter Master," Draken Vangarich told him. "What do you need to ensure the destruction of the beast and its forces on Ulanor?"
"Everything we have left," Thane told the Grand Master honestly. "I will not repeat past mistakes and overestimate my own forces while underestimating yours. My plan is to leave the Last Wall Protocol in place so that Terra remains protected by the Sons of Dawn. I will personally lead the entire chapter of Imperial Fists to Ulanor in the Phalanx, with the aim of storming the Beast's palace and cutting the Orc hordes across the galaxy off from their command structure. Without their leaders, the invader fleets will fragment. Armies will turn on themselves. Their warlords should revert to observed behaviors, fighting for supremacy amongst their ranks. This should give us time to reform, regroup, and raise an expanded Death Watch to enact a plan of eradication."
"But,"
the Fabricator General said, "but," Thane echoed, "we cannot do that without the full commitment of Imperial forces in support. We need everything that's left. Beyond the Last Wall Protocol and a skeleton force providing a sentinel defense of the core systems, I'm going to need whatever remains of the Imperial Navy, the Mechanicus Fleet, the Astra Militarum, the god machines of the Adeptus Titanicus, and the Skitari Legions. Naturally, Lady Brisanas has already pledged her Sisters of Silence to the assault."
"And leave the core systems and Terra exposed?" Kubik said. "They are already exposed," Vangarich said.
"The Grand Master is right," Thane agreed.
"An assassin knows when to commit his full resources to the attack," Vangarich said.
"An attack that must, of course, succeed," Thane said, "or the Fabricator General's fears will become reality."
"The Silent Sisterhood will do what we've always done," the Sister Commander signed. "We will stand between the Emperor and his enemies, dying if we have to, in order to see the Master of Mankind safe."
"They, along with the deployment of these alien psychers," Thane said, "will be essential
in disorientating the beast's vast army of defenders and bodyguards. If the last attack taught us anything, it is that the orc psykers draw their destructive power not just from the numbers of their kind in the vicinity, but the length of time they are exposed to them. Like batteries, we need to give them time to charge their energies before unleashing them to create a backwash of psychic power. This will give my space marines the opening they need to fight their way through the palace and obliterate the beast. We will need vessels to punch our way in through fleets of attack ships swarming the Eleanor system. We will need titans to occupy gargants and ground forces to keep a planetary horde of orcs off our backs. Even your assassins will be needed, Grandmaster.
The talents of my temples will be at your disposal, Chapter Master, Thangarich said.
Thane, Lady Brisanas, and the Grand Master looked to Kubik. The Fabricator General's optics whirred and turned slowly in his hood, as though his cogitators were handling changing numbers of great size and importance. Finally, the Fabricator General spoke.
The Adeptus Mechanicus have not forgotten the lessons the Veridi have taught us in fire and thunder, Kubik said. The Ordinatus Ulinor might have been decimated by the monstrous machines of the alien, but the priesthood of Mars can do better than vessels, titans, and legions. You will, of course, have whatever the Forge World Principle and its empire can provide. But let me confide in you the questionable as you have confided in me. Since encountering the Ulinor Orcs and their unique weaponry, my priesthood have been hard at work studying and attempting to replicate their technologies. We have met with some limited success and have managed to adapt and manipulate the Orcs' gravitic weaponry to displace large asteroids and small moons.
Displace?
Drakkon Thangarich echoed, his voice trailing off in amazement.
Yes, Kubik said. In tests conducted within uninhabited systems, our technologies managed to knock small planetoids out of their orbits and propel them towards other planetary bodies. Inertia and the natural pull of gravity do the rest.
You have this much mastery of the aliens' technology? Thane asked.
A limited application, Kubik cautioned, in a specific time and place. We could, for example, launch asteroids and small moons from the system's edge to smash through the greenskin fleets and impact upon the surface of Ulinor with varying degrees of accuracy. By the time your Adeptus Astartes arrive, Chapter Master, the defences of Ulinor will have been dealt a significant blow.
Thane extended his gauntlet. The Fabricator General took it with the bionics of his own mastercrafted appendage. The Chapter Master looked to Lady Brisanas, who nodded her agreement. Thangarich had a weak smile for the Space Marine, a little of his dark confidence returning. Thane returned the gesture.
In a few minutes, the Grand Master said, we have managed to get more agreed than a century of council meetings and palace intrigue.
Thane's smile thinned. He didn't like the sound of that, or the precedent it set. It was too late to go back, however. There was too much at stake in the present to worry about the future.
One thing, Kubik said. How shall the Lord High Admiral and the Lord Commander Militant be similarly compelled to lend, without question, their remaining ships and soldiers to this venture?
Drakkon Vangarich's wolfish smile widened further. He looked like a watchdog who had at long last been let off the leash.
Leave that to me, the Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum said.